Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and it's always a pleasure to have on the show statewide elected officials from both states in our listening area and from both political parties to talk about their latest activities to advance their respective states. Today, my guest is the state treasurer in Illinois, and he's the only official from downstate, I might add. He's Mike Frericks, and he's currently in his second term as state treasurer and will be on the ballot for re-election next year. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on.
Robin, thanks for having me on. And for your listeners in Iowa, I just want to clarify that I'm not their state treasurer, even though they have a Mike F., Democratic treasurer from an I state who will be up for re-election next year.
Yeah.
We are different people, but a lot of superficial commonalities.
Yes. And I hope to be getting him on the show as well down the road. But I know you've been traveling around the state because September is college savings month, and your office has some activities with that. So share with us a little bit about what you're doing and what you heard when you were traveling around the state.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time in September traveling up and down northern, southern, central Illinois, listening to students, administrators, people who work in financial aid, to find out what we can do to help more people achieve the American dream. We know that college is not for everyone, but increasingly, if you want a good-paying job to support yourself and your family, you need some sort of education post-high school, whether that be a university, a community college, a vocational program, a trade school, apprenticeship. We know you need something, and in my office, we're in charge of college savings plans. As I was traveling around the state, some people would ask, why is the treasurer talking about college? Well, we help people save for college, and we also recently passed legislation allow us to invest in student debt. So we're going around talking to people and seeing what the needs are, what the concerns are, and how we can be helpful.
It's interesting because most people probably don't have a clear idea of what the state treasurer does. They know by the title that it has something to do with money. Maybe take a step back and explain in fuller terms for our listeners what exactly you do and how the office has grown in some of its responsibilities since you were elected.
Robin, that's a great question. I get asked all the time what I do, or maybe I get asked questions about money. A few years ago, I got told all the time, go pass a budget. I would say that I would love to pass a budget, but that's the job of the General Assembly and the governor. And then I would have people say, I need to get paid from the state. And I'd say, well, I would love to write you a check, but that is the job of the comptroller to issue checks. And then they would invariably ask, well, what did you do? And I would say that I'm the chief investment officer of the state, Illinois. I invest our money. To which some people would say, yeah, but I hear the state has no money. What do you do all day? We do, in fact, have money. We oversee currently about $27 billion in state funds. We help local units of government, municipalities, save and invest so that they can have more interest income. And we oversee about $7 billion there. We also oversee college savings programs for the state of Illinois, totaling somewhere around $17 billion. Those are responsibilities I inherited. We came and we changed some of those, made improvements. But we also created new programs to help people save for their retirement. We help people save their own money so that they can enjoy their golden years, so that they can have a retirement with dignity. And we set up a new savings program. It's a 529 program, but for people with disabilities, allowing parents to save and give their kids with a severe disability a brighter future. That, in addition, we're a consumer protection office. Our unclaimed property department fights to get money that belongs to Illinois residents back into their hands. So it really is a great, varied job, one I'm very happy to have.
I'd like you to talk more about the unclaimed property initiative, because I heard you speak when you were on campus at Monmouth, and our listeners know I teach there part time, but I heard you talking about that. And it's very interesting, and actually, I don't want to give too much away here, but there were people in the audience there that did get on your site and find they had money due to them.
Yeah, we find about 1 in 4 people who go to our website find we have something that belongs to them, and last year the average amount was around $1,000. So it's well worth people's time to check. They can go to illinoistreasurer.gov, put their name in our website, and see if we have something that belongs to them. I encourage them also to check for their family members. Help us return money to their family members. If you have parents or grandparents that are deceased, frequently money from their estates gets turned over to us, and we'd like to track down their rightful heirs. So people will say, I keep track of my money, Treasurer. I don't have to worry about that. Well, you may keep track of your own money, but maybe there was someone out there who had money for you, and it never got to you. Maybe you applied for a rebate or a refund, and the company mailed it to the wrong address, or you thought it was junk mail. They don't get to keep that money. It belongs to you. If you worked an old job and you left quickly without collecting your last paycheck, they don't get to keep the money. We'll get that for you. We fought with life insurance companies because I think that if someone buys a life insurance policy and makes all their premium payments and then they pass away, I have this really novel concept that their loved ones ought to be paid their life insurance benefits. But not every life insurance company saw it the same way as me. So we had to go to the General Assembly and pass legislation to make it crystal clear that they have to pay out death benefits to loved ones. They've got to notify them that there's money available. So any number of ways that a company might be holding on to money that belongs to you and you weren't aware of it, well, we fight, we send our auditors in, we collect that money, and then try to track down the rightful owners.
It sounds like your office is involved in a lot of different diverse activities, and because you're able to invest back some of the proceeds that the state gets from smart investments. I saw one in particular that this time of the year with harvest coming up and all that, you are involved some in agricultural programs. Can you talk about that a little bit and any other programs you might have that our listeners be interested in?
Yeah, this is an important one to me. I grew up in a small farming community in East Central Illinois, about 30 miles outside of Champaign-Urbana. My father grew up on the farm. It was dairy cattle when he grew up. It's now beef cattle, but they grow corn and soybeans. When I served in Illinois State Senate, I served as the chairman of the Agriculture and Conservation Committee. And when I came into this office, I asked, what are we doing to promote agriculture in the state of Illinois? And was told we have an Ag Invest Link Deposit Program. And I asked how many loans were out there, and there weren't very many. Well, anyone who's followed agriculture knows that over the last few decades, it's changed dramatically. If you look at the equipment out there, the technology they're using is very different than it was 40 years ago when I was riding around in my grandfather's combine on his knee. And unfortunately, our program hadn't grown and evolved with it. So we decided to go out and listen to farmers, to bankers, to farm bureaus, and see what changes we needed to make. And so we came back, we made some changes to our program, we've seen a big uptick out there. The basic idea of this is if we can provide farmers with low interest access to capital, they need to put a crop in the ground and take it out, or they need to expand their operation or modernize or change their operation, we want to be partners to them. Because we don't give them grants, we give them loans, we still make money for the state, but if we help make them more profitable, that is also beneficial to the state of Illinois. It's a win-win.
I'm curious in your thoughts on the state's financial picture overall. As everybody knows, Illinois went through some really tough times, both caused by forces from without, outside the state, for example, the Great Recession, and of course the COVID crisis we just went through, but some certainly with some mismanagement by some governors we've had, I would say, it's fair to say, from both parties. But you go back a ways as state treasurer and before that as state senator, as you said. But how is the state financial picture looking overall to you at this point?
I would say it is looking in the right, it's going in the right direction. It's clear. Just a few short years ago, we had a governor and the General Assembly fighting. Went nearly 2 years without passing a budget. We saw nearly $16 billion unpaid bills. We saw about 8 credit downgrades. It really was a bad time for Illinois finances. Since then, we've actually seen a couple rating upgrades. We've paid down a large part of that backlog of bills. We're actually, the comptroller is turning around bill payments within 30 days, a normal cycle. So there are good signs. However, we are not completely out of the woods. I like to say we're going in the right direction. And if we keep going in that direction, things will be good. But sometimes when you start going in the right direction, you see that light in a tunnel, people want to maybe change direction. So there's still a significant pension debt. There's still a fair amount of debt in Illinois. We have pressures on our budget that make passing balanced budgets more difficult. But if the General Assembly and the governor focus on passing budgets, paying down our debts, and we do this next several years, I think there are brighter times ahead of us. Because the state of Illinois has some financial problems, but we also have some great assets. We're located in the middle of the country. We have rail lines and we have highway interstate lines galore coming through our state. We've got great airports. We're along the Mississippi River, great for transportation, and the Lake Michigan, great source of drinking water. We have some great soils here. We have great universities producing a lot of world-class talent. There is a lot positive going on in Illinois, and if we can continue to get finances going in the right direction, then I think we've got a great future.
Is there one thing specifically that caused the turnaround in state finances? I mean, this kind of came as a surprise to me. I mean, you kept hearing about how bad things were, and then all of a sudden, it's like, and it seemed like it was sudden, but I've had people on that have given different explanations of why, but is there one thing that stood out that really helped turn the state's finances around?
You know, I think it's everyone doing their part, everyone pulling on an oar. There is still clearly partisan bickering, but I think you've seen the General Assembly and the governor work together, really contain some growth in spending out there, have found adequate revenues. Now, some of this, there's still debt out there. I don't want to give an overly rosy picture. However, by working together, by having some austerity, by focusing on paying down our bills, things are starting to turn around. But it's kind of like an aircraft carrier. They don't turn on a dime. It takes a while. Even though there's some good news out there, we haven't received probably as many rating upgrades as I think we should be getting. They want to see if this serious approach towards governing continues. Because in the past, sometimes you'll have a year or two as good, and then people going out and forgetting balanced budgets. But I really hope we've turned a corner. And, you know, in our office, we look forward to being part of that. By no means has the Treasurer's Office turned it around, but we've really focused on earning interest income to the state of Illinois. Because we know that every dollar we raise in interest income is a dollar the General Assembly doesn't have to raise in taxes, or a dollar in cuts they don't have to make to things like our schools, our universities, our roads and bridges. And so since coming into office, we've made now well over $1 billion interest income, and that's a big part of the job that we focus on, trying to be part of the solution.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is Illinois State Treasurer Mike Frericks, who has been talking a little bit about the Treasurer's Office, explaining some of their programs and services, and also talking about the state, the conditions of state finances, which in Illinois have kind of improved, although, you know, we're not ready to do an end zone dance yet, but it is looking better. I want to change the focus a little bit to politics here. You really have a unique perspective. And that you, as I mentioned in the introduction, you're the only official from downstate Illinois elected on a statewide basis. And you're a Democrat, which are both unique because we know what's going on with the partisan divide in the country, but also the urban-rural split. Do you find that downstate interests get overlooked some? And do you feel like you're the main spokesman for downstate in discussions in Springfield and Chicago when big decisions are made?
Well, we do have good voices representing downstate Illinois in both the House and the Senate, but there are fewer there than when I first got elected in 2006. And so there are changes in demographics, and I feel like we need to make sure we have a voice at the table. You know, Chicago has a large population, but Chicago is not the entire state of Illinois. And our number one industry in the state of Illinois is agriculture, and downstate contributes immensely to that. I just think we do best when we listen to both sides. I think about both parts of the state, upstate and downstate, but also when we listen to both sides across the aisle, we can find better solutions. I like to say the good Lord gave us two ears and one mouth, and we should probably use them in that proportion. But if we spend more time listening to the other side than we do lecturing to people, we're much more likely to find positive results.
You're from, as you mentioned, a rural area, and you've written a little bit lately about rural Democrats who are not near extinction, but a lot less common than they used to be due to changes in our country's voting, and as I mentioned, the urban-rural divide. I noticed you were a volunteer firefighter, which I think is interesting for folks out there who volunteer their time, and I think that's admirable. But what I wanted to ask you is your thoughts on rural Democrats, and kind of summarize the piece you wrote recently about the state of rural Democrats.
Yeah, I recently wrote an editorial calling the Democratic Party not to give up on rural people. I like to tell people that downstate Illinois is full of Democrats. Too many of them just don't know it. Too many of them are looking or voting for the party that's not really looking out for their economic interests or economic well-being. The Democrats were a rural party for the longest time, the beginning of the party. But if you look over the last few decades or so, they've become more a party of urban areas. And I think under President Trump, they've become more a party in suburban areas. But I don't think we should get away from our roots. I don't think we should write off anyone out there. I talked to some people in Chicago who will say, well, we don't need downstate Illinois. It's not populated enough. We've got enough votes up here in Chicago and the suburbs. And I don't buy that. And I think that we've got a message that should be able to sell to rural people. We should care about rural people out there. You know, you mentioned that I was a volunteer firefighter. I was a volunteer firefighter because my grandfather was a volunteer firefighter. He started the volunteer fire department in my small town of Gifford, Illinois. And so I had uncles and I had cousins who were firefighters. It was that spirit of service that was instilled in me. And I think you find that in rural areas where maybe we don't have the police service or the government services that you do in urban areas. But we find that we've got to stick together. We've got to help each other out. And we do that through a lot of volunteer organizations. It might be through your churches when there's a problem in your community, various service organizations. And, you know, I think these people really care about their neighbors. And that's what, I try and do in the treasurer's office, give people opportunities to help them lead their best lives. You know, we all want to lead the American dream. It looks different for different people, and so we need to give them the tools they need to lead their version of the American dream.
Do you think, you mentioned the American dream a couple times, and I'm always interested in talking to my guests, especially those in public service. There seems we've went through some definite tough times in our economy over the last 20 years, it seems like, since 2000. Do you think the American dream is still alive in the sense that it always has been, or do you think it's been downsized? I ask my students this a lot, and I get some interesting answers, but is it still there the way perhaps our generation understood it, or has been downsized some, or what are your thoughts on it?
Well, my thought is it still exists, but it is cloudy and hazy for too many people. I think the general American dream is being able to make something of yourself, go out in the world and have opportunities to do what you want, but also to lead a better life for your children. And that's why we focus a lot on our college savings plans, helping children get the skills they need, the accreditation they need to have a good life, to support a family, to lead a better life than your parents. But I think too many people are looking at their opportunities today and saying, my life is worse off than my parents had it. Or people who were working 30 years ago say, I'm effectively working for less money today than 30 years ago, because we've lost a lot of good factory jobs. We've lost a lot of good union jobs. People are maybe making the same amount of money, but they're doing it working two jobs. And that most definitely is not the American dream. And it's those people who say, this is not working for me. I'm going backwards. I think have been able to be co-opted by politicians out there, making promises that maybe they're not going to keep. But there's a lot of fear out there, and that probably lends itself to some of the anger and the increase in partisanship we see in our country today.
You mentioned unions, and of course they provide an important base of support in the Democratic Party. And although some voters were attracted to Donald Trump, perhaps for issues maybe not dealing directly with economic issues, but other issues related to gun ownership, things like that. Do you think unions are on the decline in our country? Are they still a force within the party? And I guess how do you kind of rate the relationship with organized labor right now within the party?
You know, I would say, just as we talked earlier, that agriculture has changed significantly over the last 30 years. So has the labor movement. And I think in some ways the labor movement has been successful to a detriment. They've helped a lot of working class people, a lot of people in the building trades, have a good quality of life. You know, they have a good wage. They feel really comfortable. And they've kind of forgotten that they had to fight to get those wages. And if they feel comfortable, then they might focus a little more on social issues or other things other than paycheck issues. But I do think that there are some unions out there looking to expand. And there is definitely a group of lower wage workers out there that I think are looking for some leadership and some ways to work collectively to improve their lot in life. So I think it's just it's changing. You know, depending on what part of labor you look at, you can see some retrenchment, but you can also see some growth in other areas.
I came across an interesting article that I'll ask you about, because I know your focus has been on downstate and rural Democrats, which those Democrats tend to be more what's called, referred to as the white working class, whites without college degrees. And this article dealt with the median Democratic voter, which was a little surprising, I think, to some people anyway. It wasn't necessarily to me. But how do you approach, what are your thoughts on how the party needs to broaden its base to talk to more diverse audiences? And diversity meaning also based on region, like rural areas and those that may be a little more middle of the road, more moderate or conservative.
Yeah, I want to make it clear that we focus on Illinois citizens and giving them opportunities to lead their best lives. And that includes those who traditionally have not been given opportunities, but it includes everyone. You know, when we talk about the need to save for college, this is not a black or white or Hispanic issue. It's not an upstate or a downstate issue. It is the key to a good-paying job, getting a university degree or community college degree, associate's degree, maybe getting a learning a trade or a skill. Those are things that I think if we focus on economic issues, everyone understands those. When we talk about helping people save for their retirement, I think almost everyone I talk to says they look forward to that day when they can retire. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to sit in a lazy boy, so they don't want to have to be forced to work until death. They want to have that choice of volunteering their time, spending more time with their grandchildren later in life. And that's not something that's just a downstate or a urban area issue. It talks to everyone. And so I think when we talk about things like that, or helping those most vulnerable, those people with developmental disabilities, or fighting on behalf of consumers against big corporations they feel sort of powerless against, those are issues that span all of our constituents. But I think sometimes some Democrats get focused talking about certain groups and trying to divide Americans. When we talk about bigger pictures, I think we're going to have more success throughout the state of Illinois.
I want to close one last question here, and I keep coming back to that because when I was preparing, I saw, I don't know why it stuck with me, but the fact that you were a volunteer firefighter, which I admire in your background, but as you know, the number of volunteers for fire departments and in other areas has been declining, and I know you're familiar with Rob Putnam's book on Bowling Alone. And then when you throw in the extreme partisanship and divisions in this country, it just seems like I kept thinking that maybe volunteer activities like this might be a path back to kind of at least getting us together a little more and overcoming some of these divisions. Have you given thought to that as you travel the state again? You go everywhere. I know that. We're a big, diverse state, a lot of different people. We're divided like other places. But how do we, any thoughts on how to kind of get us back having a little bit more in common where we can talk through issues without wanting to grab each other's throats?
Yeah, Robin, I've given a lot of thought to that. We could fill a whole other interview, a whole other podcast with this. There are a variety of factors out there. But, you know, I mean, I think one of the ones that is really difficult to overcome is, you know, when I was younger, you had your three television stations, and those were your entertainment options, and eventually you got your VCRs, and people were looking for things to do outside the household. So they liked joining organizations, meeting other people. Well, now we have social media, and we can really self-select the people we interact with. You know, in my hometown, you know, you go to church, and there'd be Democrats and there'd be Republicans there. On the volunteer fire department, we didn't ask somebody what their partisanship was, what party they belonged to. If we were going to run into a fire with them, we didn't care. Just made sure we had each other's backs. And those kind of relationships were stronger than partisanship, and it allowed you to have reasonable conversations. I'm struck now on social media where people just surround themselves with like-minded people. They cheer each other on and then just scream at the other side. You know, I posted something on social media a week or so ago about a report that ranked Chicago as the second most beautiful city in the world. And I thought that was nice. It was something fair. It was positive for Illinois. And the number of people who were commenting negative things about the city and the largest city in their state just really struck me, and just sort of saying some kind of hateful things. We need to get back to meeting people in person. You know, you can say bad things to someone's face, but it's a lot harder than it is to post an anonymous comment on a blog or on social media. And those sort of volunteer organizations, things that get people outside their houses and interacting with people face-to-face, is what keeps the fabric of our society strong and civil. How we get them back out, though, I don't have all the answers to, but we're trying. We try that through our various programs. We try that by getting out and interacting with people and seeing that we want to help all Illinoisans, not just one party.
I appreciate your answer. I do think that's something we all need to think about. We all got to contribute to, and hopefully we can continue to do that. And I'd be glad to talk more at length with you next time you're on, but we've run out of time. Mike Frericks, the state treasurer of Illinois, has been our guest today on Heartland Politics, talking a variety of things here. And Mike, again, thank you for your time, and look forward to having you back at some point down the road.
Greg, Robin, we'll look forward to talking with you. Have a great day.
Heartland Politics is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can hear more on the Heartland Politics podcast, available at WVIK.org, in the WVIK app, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.